All right, welcome back. 239-1310. 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. We are here. We got our a panel, Tammy Robinson with Engaging Solutions, Charlotte Westerhaus, former vice president of NCAA, former interim president of Martin University, Dennis Bland from the Center for Leadership Development, Rod Bohannon, somebody here with gray hair, attorney and activist, Regina Marsh, executive director, Forest Manor Multi-Service Center, Crystal Radcliffe, president of the NAACP, Joe Slash, president of the Urban League, business owner Deborah Oates, Tanya Bell, president of Expo, Shannon Williams, the head of the Recorder, Marcus Robinson, head of the Tinley Schools, Pastor Michael Jones, Progressive Missionary Baptist Church and National Action Network, Dr. David Hampton, pastor of Light of the World Church, State Representative Cherish Pryor, Erica Smith, columnist for the Indianapolis Star, Greg Wilson, head of the city's Office of Minority and Women-Owned Business and board chair of Black Expo, Deborah Hearn Smith, head of the Girl Scouts. So now we've reset everybody. Violence, crime, depending on how you count homicides, 14 to 20 killed already this year. We're ahead of the timeline for last year. There are some that are asking the question, why haven't black leaders called a press conference so the Star 6, 8, 13, and 59 can run quotes from black leaders saying, violence is a problem, we have to stop it. Do we need to do that now, and would it do any good? Erica says it would. Why?
I think it would. I mean, I don't necessarily know if it would do much good for our community in general, because I think we all know that violence is here and we need to stop it as a community. But I think it would do a lot for getting other people, non-black people in this community, frankly, on board with us. Because it's harder to get other people to convince people that we need help when we're not publicly saying this is a problem. I mean, we are all saying it's a problem, but we're not saying in a collective voice. So I think there's value in saying that and getting it out there to mainstream.
Rod, does there need to be the grand gathering?
Well, not necessarily the grand gathering as a support. Let's go back historically. For those who were here in the late mid-80s, down off Central Avenue, which they now tore down, the nation started patrolling when they started having the issue turned up. This is not the first time we had in this community the gun issue. And they began, it was Dodge City, and began patrolling there, being turned away and began trying to reduce that. If you think about just recently, about 2011, 2012, the Guardian says that we would help patrol downtown Indianapolis when we were dealing with trying to figure out the kids. But there was not the support. And so what I'm saying is that when you begin to look at this issue, we're going to take some folks like the Guardians who said we have the expertise to do the patrol in the neighborhood. It may take skills like the nation, which happened in Chicago. I know the brother from Brooklyn knows that the nation started going some of the public housing projects in Brooklyn when they began having issues in terms of crime, particularly some of the seniors who felt threatened going shopping. And so those issues, I think, that there are old solutions. But the question becomes, if they start doing that, will we support them? Doesn't matter whether you like the nation or not. Doesn't matter if you don't like the Guardian. Doesn't matter in terms of with the old Panther. Because remember, Panther started both in terms of patrolling the neighborhood to reduce crime. And so the question becomes, as we look at those old solutions, which worked, what happened was we as a community did not support it. So it gave the excuse for the politicians and said, well, the community don't want the Panthers here. The community don't want the nation patrolling. And so if I were the nation, why would I continue with it without its support? But that's what's going to take to begin trying to reduce that level.
Is that akin now to 10-point coalition? In other words, are we at a point where the churches need to kick in to make sure the 10-point or somebody grows?
I mean, we need to support ourselves. Look, I keep saying, we keep asking why others when we had to build ourselves to do it. Mm-hmm. The 10-point coalition ought to be able to get from every church in this community a support base. It doesn't matter if they decide I can only give you $100 this month. But if that's what they need in terms of building the resources, be able to get the money in the terms of the radios and to build the network. So you begin patrolling other parts of the city besides downtown or only when there's a crisis and somebody got killed. That's what we need to do. But we have to make a decision that we're willing, as I said earlier, 10% of the turn of our tide and 10% of our time. And two, we adopt that model. We're not going to move off the dime.
Hey, Amos.
Yeah.
Greg Wilson.
Yeah.
One thing, too, is just building on that is on our block, we as the neighborhood, look out for our neighborhood and our block, for our seniors and others. We watch out to see who's on our streets. And I live in 46208 area where they say is high crime. But we watch out for our community. You have to take individual responsibility, too. I mean, you can always say, like Frank said, the cavalry ain't coming. You have to take personal responsibility also to make a difference. And we cannot accept crime. We cannot, no matter how bad things are, we cannot say it's okay. When things are happening, we have to speak out against it. We can't accept it. Now, we can work on the solution to fix those things in our community that need to be fixed. But the most important thing is we have to let people know we do not accept crime. We won't accept this murder. We won't tolerate it.
But that has to mean a different level of demand from us as a community. And we don't demand anything for our community. It's a problem. When we have failing and falling apart schools, we don't get up and cuss anybody out. When we have folks, the real problem for me, Amos, about those folks being put out on 42nd and Post was they were allowed to live on 42nd and Post with no water, with roaches, the whole nine. And so at some point, we have to say there's an acceptable quality of life for black people, and we're going to demand it. We know IMPD is a great policing organization. Why do we know that? Because if you rob somebody up off 71st in Michigan or Meridian, we'll chase you all the way to Texas and bring you back, right? And so this isn't a question of we don't have good answers to the solutions. It's just which community is important enough to police, which group of kids is important enough to educate, and which group of poor folks are important enough to have adequate housing for. And so until we stop being polite, you know, let's get together. We need to go off on some folk. We need to throw some rocks. We need to march. We need to do something that shows that we care emphatically about our community. Until that happens, then it's just always going to be have a convening and then some cake.
We go to Deborah, and then Pastor Jones and Shannon.
Okay. I really think there are two things we need to keep in mind. One is the legislation talking about prison records, and the other is education and jobs. These young men have no hope. And when you have no hope out there on the street, life doesn't have the sanctity that we all and the respect that we all think it should, and we know it should. We're talking about a generation of young men who are not well educated, are not finishing high school, and if they are, they are not job ready. They're in the streets, and their way to get along is in that community doing things that we don't like. We got to go back to the beginning because and once they're arrested, then they really can't do anything else. So they get arrested on disorderly conduct, DWI, not crimes against themselves more than anyone else. Then they have a record, and we put them out on the street, and then we want to police. We've got to go back to helping young people, and I say girls and boys. Young people have hope, because without hope, our streets are in trouble.
Pastor Jones, then Shannon Williams, then Center for Leadership Development.
Okay, Dennis Blaine. Two things very quickly. One, I want to follow up behind my brother from the charter school system and suggest that what I hear you saying, what I want to say it more directly is that historically, Brother Rod, we have not been just us by ourselves. We didn't fight slavery as black people only. We always had white partners and partners outside of our community who understood justice, came alongside us. We didn't fight the civil rights movement after that by ourselves. We always had white partners. NAACP wasn't founded. There were white people at the very beginning as a part of the founding of the NAACP to help us to figure out how we were going to work on some of our own solutions. Folks who believed in what we were doing and understood that it was good for not just us, but good for America. We got to stop making crime be the black problem. Crime is an American problem. It's a poverty problem. And we do need to have partnerships beyond. I don't think it should be just us policing us when we don't have a police force, because the nation will go out there and do stuff, and they should. But if they cross a line, the police are going to arrest them. We need some police partnerships who have police power. We also have to also understand something else in terms of economic development in this country switching things. Y'all, nationwide right now, there's a move towards making marijuana legal, growing marijuana, selling marijuana. So many of our people have been criminalized for smoking a joint. And I'm a pastor. I'm not trying to, y'all can say what you want to say. We got a lot of folk in our churches right now who smoking a little joint. They leave church and they watching the game. They getting high. They doing what they doing. Now it's all about to be legal. What used to be criminalizing for us is now going to be dollars for them.
Now, here we have been in the weed business and now won't be in the weed business. And it's amazing how things are shifting. We got to make sure we're positioning ourselves to take advantage of some of this stuff. And I'm not saying I believe in, this is not my statement that says weed is good, y'all should go get some. This is my statement that says that's what's happening. And if we're already in the business and have been punished for it, why shouldn't we also profit from it? And I'm just saying we got to pay attention to what's going on around us and get involved and build partnerships beyond us. We are capable, we are skilled, and we can do some things. But, y'all, it's not just us by ourselves. It never has been. So stop making – our community is not only not monolithic, it's not one color. One of my pastor friends always said this, everybody your color is not always your kind, and everybody not your color is not always your enemy. Pay attention to what they do, not what they look like.
Shannon.
You know, we're here, we're talking about problems, we're aiming towards solutions. But I think it's really important to note that we have to be receptive. We have to be receptive to the perspectives of other people. We have to listen to people outside of, you know, all of us in this room. We have to listen to people outside who may not have a title behind their name. I think that's part of the problem. We're not receptive, and we as a community, as a culture sometimes, we devalue our own people by thinking they're less important or don't know what they're talking about because they may not be of a certain status. Mm-hmm. And that goes from, you know, the education to crime, poverty, just everything. So I think one way to really get some really tangible solutions is to be receptive to people.
On Twitter, I'm hearing two schools of thought. You know, some that are listening and they're saying, you know, we're hearing the problems, we don't hear solutions. But I'm also getting on Twitter, folks that are saying there should be. Rhonda says solution based meetings with calls to action, action steps and plans. Meeting to meet is over. Another one, Lachelle is volunteering. I have the vision to help build the infrastructure for African Americans here in Indy. Oh, you're going to get a reply, Sister Lachelle, because I'm going to put you on Front Street. And if you're listening, Lachelle, you know who you are. You know, tell us why. Come on, you've given us an idea. Now give me some more solutions. Here's another one. Yaya, all right, says we have to support individuals in being leaders in their own neighborhoods. Yep. Someone else, Jimmy, says ideas are great. What actions are being taken, though? Big Car has been working to build community. What about you? You know who Big Car is? Mm-hmm. What's Big Car?
Big Car is a community collective out in Lafayette Square area, a.k.a. the International Marketplace. Mm-hmm. It's run by a guy named Jim Walker, who actually used to work at the Star. But what I like about what they do is that they've actually gone out in the neighborhood and talked to people, as opposed to holding meetings, helping people come to them. They've gone out, talked to people, get involved. They really kind of know what's going on in that side of the town as much as humanly possible. And it's something that it's a good model, and they've done various different things. Yep. It's about arts, it's about community, and about bringing people together.
And this is a multiracial group?
It is a multiracial group. I would say it's probably most of the people that are in leadership are white, but they've actually made a lot of partnerships with a lot of people on that side of town, a lot of people from a lot of the different countries that are represented here, and also some the African American community there as.
Ebony on Twitter at Amos WTLC Indy says, Pastor Hampton, I especially like the idea of a black bank. Financial freedom and education are keys to progress in our community. Then Watchdog, who's all over the internet. If Watchdog ain't responding to you, you're not a real leader. Watchdog is saying no goal setting, no educational expectations, no unacceptable behavior. Should the community set what is unacceptable behavior, or do we already know it and the other community doesn't know that we've already said it is wrong to kill somebody?
When you talk about community expectations, we have been having several work group meetings around crime and prevention. I'm a member of the Forest Manor Board. And at our last meeting, the discussion was about coming up with a community covenant. What is our value statement? And being able to express that to people so that they understand what as a community are we going to stand for? And so it goes back to Marcus's point in what are we going to demand? And then once we have stated, this is what our values are, this is what we're not going to take any longer, then it's organizing and mobilizing around that. Because when Representative Pryor talks about the fact that there's minimum wage legislation that people need to be supporting, if you don't train people how to do advocacy, how to write letters to their legislators, how to come down to the state house, how to make signs and buttons like we used to do, or when you reference Senator Glenn Howard, he used to drive around to the construction sites and see how many African Americans were on site. And he would then call and say, they need a job. We have African Americans that need jobs. And so as we talk about mobilizing and somebody needs to lead, I think all of us are yielding that leadership instead of taking the leadership. I don't think we should leave here today without saying everybody around this table should look at their calendar and say, when can we all meet again?
But going back on jobs and remembering Glenn Howard going around and doing that, or Moselle Sanders slap up a picket line in front of a grocery store. And I know I forgot you, Dennis. But in today's world where you can't get the job by begging on the site, you got to fill out an application online. Has that taken, if Glenn was here today, he couldn't do that.
But there are resources that are out there, and I think that's where asset mapping becomes very important in our community because, for example, I recently had a meeting with Shanika Hayward at the 38th Street Library. They have the computers that are there and available, being able to work with people on their resumes and being able to get jobs, but we have to connect these resources. I heard Dennis talk about strengthening families. How do we get parent engagement? And a part of this is integrating it also with the chamber, with businesses. Deb and I both are business owners, and as business owners, people will often say to us that are on the flip side, we can't find African Americans that are accountants. Well, when you come to our office, we have accountants. She has people in construction that are able to do the work that needs to be done, so we have to support our minority-owned businesses, and as we do that through expanding procurement opportunities, but it doesn't just become isolated to our community. We have to build partnerships.
Let me go to Dennis.
Amos, you said this would be a frank conversation, so let's be frank. Your lead-in talked about putting the elephant in the room. That in and of itself suggests that there's a fundamental problem in the community, and that is that we are not very good with being honest with ourselves. Mm-hmm. And consequently, the issues just continue to persist. They never get resolved. Number two, we have a problem in distinguishing cause versus symptoms. Exactly. You can't get to a right solution if you don't know the difference between a problem and the underlying causation. Mm-hmm. We have deeper causes that we don't address. Mm-hmm. Has anyone ever polled students or young people, a group of black young people, and asked them what society values? Mm-hmm. Look at the answers and see if the names of young people come up on their list. Mm-hmm. Young people will tell us that they are not valued. Mm-hmm. We also have a challenge in our community about being honest about whether or not we remove this word called morality from the conversation. See, when you talk about morality, it means you begin to make distinctions. Is there a right and a wrong, or is there not? Is there a good or a bad, or is there not? We can't have it both ways. You can't take 65 going to California. And somehow we want to send the message that young people, you can both do whatever you want to do and at the same time be accountable. It doesn't happen. So number one, I'm in the habit of apologizing to young people a lot of times. I apologize for what we did to you. You are not making laws. You are not making decisions. The consequences are borne on your back because of decisions adults have made. And until adults can begin to, number one, say, I messed up, young man, and number two, I have to do a better job, and number three, a part of my responsibility as an adult is to be a good example for you, number one, and then I have to actually advocate and champion for you, and one of the ways I do that is by holding you accountable. And so you look at the situations today. You have so much violence because we message violence. Mm-hmm. We have laws that are senseless. And yet, young people then perpetuate senselessness, and then we say, wow, that's so senseless. Well, we allow senseless music. Yes. So why are you surprised if a young person hears a message that says, smoke some weed, and then they smoke it? And then why are you surprised if you defecate on somebody that they stink? Mm-hmm. The young people are saying, I have been thrown on the trash heap of humanity, and now you have the nerve to be shocked because you smell my stench. We owe our young people an apology, we owe them responsibility, and then we owe them a method of how they can actually move from uncertainty and hopelessness to a pathway of hope. If we don't get this morality business together, Your life is important. My life is important. Crime is going to continue. If we don't get the education together, then it impacts the crime. It impacts the jobs. It impacts everything else. But it starts with a value system, and that's what we have to teach our young people.
I'm going to let Dennis drop the mic on this one. I'm going to go to break. We'll come back on the other side. See, that's media talk for everybody's going to listen now and say, daggone, what are they going to say after that? And Dennis dropped the mic. He picked up and walked out the door. Well, figuratively, not literally. It's After News with Amos Moore after these. And tomorrow we'll open up the phone lines. Oh, my Friday friend will be here tomorrow, but he has to promise, since he believes he's a black leader, that he needs to get out in some of these neighborhoods and try to lead these neighborhoods. If you think you a leader, get out there, Brother Abdul, and lead. Yeah, okay. Hey, I'll be out there watching. That would be the, anyway, 239-1310, 239-1310, okay, what you got?
Hi, Debbie Oates with Nubian. It's difficult to come behind Dennis Bland, but whenever I hear him speak, it just propels me to say, I'm giving to Center for Leadership Development, awesome organization. He talked about there need to be an apology to our young folk, and we do need to apologize, and we need to talk about what morality is, what respect is. I'm a business owner, Martin Del Brightwood community, was raised in the community. So thankful for opportunities for procurement to grow minority businesses. But one thing about minority businesses, when they're strong, when you have the ability, you give back to your community. Mm-hmm. You can mentor. I cannot tell you how many people my husband and I have mentored. We think about how can we build the next generation to mentor. Our young black girls, how can we get a message to them and demonstrate to them and show them what it means to be proud black women, what it means to be just generally when we're looking at even within the Hispanic community, what does that mean? Because they look to us for answers. And especially what we're looking at today, trying to define what morality is, trying to get better jobs, to become educated. We all have an indictment against us at this very table because we are so fractured.
Let me go back. I'm going to Crystal Radcliffe of the NAACP, and then I want to ask a question to the business folks here.
Okay. Amos, I think when we talk about, I want to go back to what Shannon was saying, and we were talking about, we talk about class of people because all of us here are a certain class. We start looking at people from 18 to 30 years old. We look at Shaniqua. Let's be frank here. Ray Ray. Are we going out knocking on their doors about their children? No, we're over in 46218, which was born and raised there, that grew up there. And we don't go knock on those doors because as a community, we're afraid of our own people. So we can't go out and educate a generation we've lost to educate their children until we can find a way to reach them. But and we have to go back to the communities as a whole to do that.
But is it also not just knocking on the door at 46218, but knocking at the door in the apartment complexes in 46254 and 46268? Somebody wrote on Twitter, Charlie, where are the job readiness training programs for teens? Where is summer employment, which we really don't have because the dollars are not there federally. The dollars are not there locally. Not that there's local dollars can't be done. We just don't have enough money. Is that one of the problems? And then one of the other thing that I got from somebody that says, first we need to create business in our communities, and our money would bounce 8 to 10 times in our community before our money goes outside other communities. But is there a disconnect between what the community perceives is our black businesses in the community? Because most are not we've got some service, some retail, but a lot of the black-owned businesses are construction, are not consumer-based businesses. So do we have a disconnect that the community would like more consumer-based businesses, and that doesn't exist?
I think there is a disconnect. Consumer-based businesses don't exist in the community like they should. So the question is, how do we make that happen? How do we help somebody achieve their dream of having even a retail store or being able to sell cupcakes like they do on Massachusetts and those kind of things? So I think that's the question. If you don't have funding, if you don't have a mentor, if you don't have systems and resources in place to do that, It's like the lost American dream.
Have we put too much emphasis, Greg, on construction and service businesses that can do business with government so you get certified and all of that and all the great things the city and the state have done with minority businesses, but not enough emphasis? I had a caller the other day said, why can't we have a donut shop on 38th Street? The banks would probably fund a construction company before a black construction company before they would fund a black donut shop.
Well, Amos, those are all good questions. One thing I will say is there are small businesses out there that do perform those smaller services. I think, though, the problem is that people don't know about those businesses. In our repository, we have the little small plumbing company, the electrical companies. A lot of times when you have needs at your home, you tend to call the big box companies versus looking to see who is a local-based minority company. And a lot of times you can go to our website and find those types of companies. But if people don't know where they're at and how to find them, I think that's the challenge, is making sure that we communicate. A lot of these businesses do exist, just like we have a company that makes suits. We have brothers and sisters who have those type of clothing companies that are out there that do this type of work. It's just making sure people that are aware of those companies and where how to find them.
But on the disconnect, is it also a disconnect that somebody, I ran into somebody, and I said this on the air the other day, that opened up a soul food restaurant at 96 and 69 on the Fisher's side of the street. I don't know whether Fisher's knows they got them out there, but it's on the Fisher's side of the street. And but here's the other thing that the community would say, oh, it's because it's not on 38th Street, it's not a black-owned business.
Well, I think those, not just on Fisher, though, they are black-owned businesses. That's why I said it. We got to quit dividing on where people live and where they're at to say whether they're black-owned or black, period. We have tons of black restaurants and business, but the key aim is we have to support them. Because a lot of these businesses hire those second chance people, those who need help, those who are looking for that job on the spot, they will hire them. I think that we have to invest back, because a lot of times, I'll give for instance, when Foot Lockers and was on 38th and Illinois, I believe, and that was Jerry Harkness' store, it was on 38th and Illinois. Mm-hmm. We didn't pack that store. We went out to Castleton to buy the same shoes that Foot Locker that was on 38th Street sold. We have to understand that we have to invest in the business when they're there, or they won't stay there. Mm-hmm. And then once you invest in those businesses, others will build around that. So I think that's important for us to understand. It's about community and investing in communities and those businesses that are there. And then those businesses, in return, we should demand and ask them to reinvest back into the community.
Go ahead. I was going to say, we also have to demand not only for them to give back in their community, but have a sense of excellence in their business. Because I think a lot of our business, because they are dealing with lack of funding, whether it be loans or business coming into the store, we're not always treated the best in some of our businesses by some of our folks. Even as me, and I hire people from the community, even the folks, and I'll be honest, that come and work for me. You give them a chance without skill set, and those are the first persons that turn around and get you one way or another. So I want us to also, within our community, talk about being excellent,
yes,
having expectations of being the best we can be as people in general. And someone talked about classism. I want to hear about that. We are all, when it comes down to it, y'all, we all in the same class. And so let's be honest, we all in that class. And if we're all in that same class, then we all have to work together to be the best. We all have to encourage Expo. We all have to say, I'm going to Expo this year. We're talking about supporting our folks. We're not even supporting our Expo. So how do we all work together to support our businesses and expect them to be the best businesses that they can be?
Is it also community? Somebody talked about block clubs. Somebody talked, I know, Greg, you touched on this, about neighborhoods working together, mm-hmm, on the assumption that maybe 5 or 6 years from now we'll have another bad winter like we're having now. Is it something to be prepared so that if that block club or that neighbor, particularly those are neighbor associations that charge us homeowners those fees, and I never know where those fees go, why can't they take some of those fees, buy some snow shovels, and hire the kids that live in the neighborhood, not to clean the street, but to clean the sidewalk, so we're all obeying the sidewalk law? In terms of that, or block clubs, you put some legitimate money in some kid's pocket. Mm-hmm. Maybe that kid will decide next winter I'm going to have the snow shoveling business.
But,
That's exactly right. There's an example of that. I believe it was Fervent Prayer on the east side of town that decided they were going to do a summer program. They were going to pay the young people to do landscaping and have that happen, creating a neighborhood tool bank where you can have Keep Indianapolis Beautiful to donate some shrubs and trees and different things, talking to the legislators to see. They will oftentimes contact those legislators to say, is there an organization you want us to donate some shrubs and trees to? And then pooling our resources. So if the resources are scarce, if you pool them, I may not be able to hire 50 people, but if we pool our resources, then maybe we can together hire 50 young people over the summer and be able to give them employment opportunities. And I think that's what becomes important. And we've talked a lot around the table about having a black bank. Well, there is an African-American credit union that exists in the city, but how many of us make a deposit into that credit union?
What's the name?
With Mount Zion. Mount Zion has a, exactly. And so as we talk about our institutions are dying, do we support those institutions and then do we profile them? So there's a lot that comes out in the recorder about what's happening with minority businesses and the like, but is it hitting mainstream media so that people will be able, and then who's putting the response together? There used to be the Friday group that used to get together. Representative Bill Crawford used to coordinate. And people would come on Friday and they would talk about issues in the African-American community. And then they would say, who's going to the editorial board to sit down and talk to them? That's the community mobilizing that needs to happen so that we develop a response. And the response shouldn't just happen by one person, but even the platforms that we have as head of organizations in our churches. I pastor a church in 46218. And every Sunday, I have been giving the week-ending crime report because we have the highest in 46218 of the crime rate. So every Sunday, I'm sharing that information. We should all be doing that.
Yes. Amos, we also have to stop stereotyping ourselves, too, sometime, that we say, well, don't, I hear this, listen, I go out and speak to a group and they say, oh, well, they ain't going to do a good job, so I have to go get that. We have to be careful of that, too. We stereotype our businesses, oh, you're not going to get anything there, let's just go over here. We have to stop putting that stuff out there as well and start saying that we can do and we are better than what people say that we are. Just because he doesn't believe it doesn't mean I don't have to believe it. And I know that we can do those things and we're very successful.
And that's really where the accountability and the feedback comes into play. So if you go into an African-American business and you feel like that business is not up to par, do you share that with the business owner? Do you give them suggestions on how they can improve? Now, some people will turn a deaf ear, but those that really care and want to operate in the spirit of excellence, they will embrace that. And then we should continue to support them.
I want to go to education just a hot second and go over to Representative Cherish Pryor. Because we had some legislation that was going to try to give extra money if you go and teach in a trouble school or something like that. Do we have a bill that if somebody, particularly either an African American wants to go into teaching or somebody wants to go and teach in trouble schools, if they agree to do it for 5 years, they get their loans torn up?
We have a bill, we actually have a program, not a bill, the Minority Teacher Scholarship Program, that will give students up to $4,000 depending on their need if they major in teaching. And they have to teach within Indiana in 5 years. And that is you brought up a good issue. One of the, I think, bigger problems with our educational system is that we don't have enough of us who go into teaching. That's not seen as the job that where we can make a lot of money, so we don't go into that.
Or pay the loan back.
But there's a great need for kids to see people who look like us in those classrooms, especially men. And I think that's a big problem that we have with education. We were trying to get the program to also apply for graduate school, but that bill, again, didn't go anywhere. So there are programs out there. I think one thing that we need to do is get a clearinghouse or something where we know where all these resources are in our community because they're out there, but we don't know where to go to get them. You know, Greg has the stuff with the city. Tanya has a lot of resources. The churches have numerous resources. CLD, we have all these resources, but there's not one place for us to go.
No central repository.
No central repository, and we need that. But the Minority Teacher Scholarship Program is a great program, $4,000 that you get on top of your financial aid that you can spend any way you want. $4,000. That is significant.
We'll take a break. We'll be back with our remaining moments. Tomorrow you'll have at the panel, and I'm going to hold my Friday friend down because he better come with some solutions. Don't come with that. And I hope my Friday friend doesn't come slandering our community the way he slandered some Hispanics who cleaned his sidewalk, and he wrote about it on Twitter. Yeah, I'm going to talk about him. If you don't come to my community, try to be nice and then disrespect the Latino community, because Latino is part of our family here at Radio 1, and I don't play that. It's After News with Amos after these. All right, so where do we go? It was wonderful to have you all here. You ate up all the food. That's a good thing. Chris is happy because he got a cake. Where does this community go from here? Because the crisis will not end because 15, 16 people were in this room today. Where do we go? Don't be shy.
Amos, I'm going to pick up on the challenge that was issued. We've got to continue to meet with this same group and some expanded leadership, the heads of other organizations. So I will offer to host the next meeting at the Urban League. I will have Tanya shoot out some dates and times, and we're going to hold ourselves accountable. Let's get this manifesto of community standards and value system together. Let's start there, then we can go.
Charlotte? And I'm not trying to be, I guess, overly Pollyanna, but I wanted to say this. A shout out to all the African-American mothers, grandmothers, aunties, uncles who are doing something. I have two grandchildren in one of the charter schools here, and I won't say what it is, but Marcus knows them. And I tell you, when they have an event for my grandchildren, when they have an assembly, when they have, you can't find a parking space, you can't find a seat, we do show up. How can we engage our black community who love and care and support our kids, who hold these teachers to high standards? I don't see pictures of them, I'm sorry, Erica, in the mainstream media. Only time I see them is on Black History Month and Martin Luther King Day. We have people in our community, and they're not at this table, who every single day make sure their kids get to school, they're well fed, and they're involved. I live out in the burbs, and I see these white parents showing up, and everybody just takes for granted white parents do it. But the stereotype, and sometimes we perpetuate this, that we don't have a community that cares about our kids. I mean, I had to fight with a grandma, because I'm a grandma, on her sitting on a space I was saving for grandpa, because she wanted to be close to her kids. They will fight to get close to their kids. And you know, Marcus, you see these parents showing up. I mean, they're poor, they're uneducated, and they will fight to get their kids a spot in the best school possible. So when you're having these manifestos and we're having these meetings, why don't we go and find the parents and the families who are on fire and they just need a direction and where to go? So I want to give a shout out to all y'all. If you're listening to us and you got a sense that we have not heard your voices, we don't see who you are. A lot of you are working in poverty, but you're working quite well. And then I'm going to do one other thing. All these churches out there, mm-hmm. lead by example. We got more churches in some zip codes mm-hmm. than we got places you can buy food. Mm-hmm. And yet, they're not talking and mm-hmm. praying and celebrating with each other. Mm-hmm. So the movement that I grew up with, the civil rights movement back in the 50s and 60s, it was led by collaboration of Christian, mm-hmm. Jewish, and Catholic churches with our involvement with them. So I know I'm calling out to all your pastors, and I love my pastor to death, but we are looking to you too, as well as leadership. So shout out to all the grandmas, aunties, and stuff who are actually out there every single day making sure those nappy heads are combed, their haircut is nice, their legs aren't ashy, they do their homework, right? That's right. They eat a good meal as much as they can afford, and then they make sure they're back in school the next day.
It's men who do that too now.
Yeah, to all the fathers, uncles, brothers.
My late husband did learn how to comb hair and put them barrettes with little balls on it back in the day.
We want to thank all of our participants that have been here this afternoon taking their time out to share with us. This audio of this program will be posted on our website after about 6 o'clock tonight, praiseindy.com. And then tomorrow, it's going to be, y'all going to be like reviewers, like Siskel and Ebert, God rest their souls, mm-hmm. reviewing all of this
on the program tomorrow. One other thing I want to share with everybody. We shared it with the men and women who are in this room before we went on the air. But these radio stations, we all know about the problems of violence in this community. These radio stations are going to be doing something using our airwaves and our website to try to put a small dent into the problem. So we're going to lead on that particular issue by example. So just keep your radios tuned to AM 1310 The Light and all of our sister stations. Check out our websites. That initiative is coming very, very soon. We want to thank Dave and John. Dave and John hooked up all this equipment in a room that wasn't designed for it and made it all work. And Max and Eric on our promotion staff putting everything together, and our magic photographer as well. I'm Amos Brown. Have a great day. We'll discuss all of this tomorrow.
Happy anniversary,
Live
Amos.
At 1.
Happy anniversary.